The Making of a Modern Man, a podcast dedicated to ambitious men who want to unlock the potential from their mind, body, and life. My name's Jack Taylor, and I'm a men's health, performance, and behaviour change specialist. I believe that every man has the potential for greatness. Most just don't know how to unlock it. And that is the intention of this podcast, to help you step into your power and become the man you've dreamt of being. So if you're now ready to elevate all areas of your life, let's dive in. Today's episode is with Dan Constable. Dan is a men's freedom coach. He focuses on helping men to stop self-sabotaging by getting them out of their own way and finding their life's purpose. Dan has become a good friend of mine, and his personal journey is remarkable. In this episode, he'll explain how he went from being bullied at school and addicted to drugs to finding his path to freedom. We also touch on how your upbringing can influence your identity and what you can do today to start changing your beliefs and your behaviours. This has been one of my favourite conversations of the year, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So if you're ready to unlock your potential, let's get to it. Dan, thank you for being here, mate. Finally, this is long overdue. We've had multiple attempts at trying to get this together, partly on my end, mainly on my end. So thank you very much for being here today, mate. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you for having me, mate. Yeah, I am very excited about doing this, finally.
Right. So I think what would be helpful for myself, but also for the audience as well, mm-hmm. is really getting a good understanding of who is Dan. What does a day in the life of Dan look like? So what is it that you're doing for work at the moment? And ultimately, what's led you to where you are today?
Okay, so a day in the life, if we start from the top, a day in the life, I'm a coach by trade, and I'm also a trainer. I work with organisations helping men, mainly in large, get to a place of, let's call it what it is, mental wealth, clarity, purpose. In terms of my coaching practice, I tend to help directors, leaders, men that tend to self-sabotage their own highest quality of life, dreams, that type of thing. And I get them to a place of when they can go and achieve whatever the thing is for them, whether it's the dream job, the dream role, the experience. I get them to that place, to a life of clarity, where they don't have any more limitations that tend to be self-imposed and tend to be restricted because they keep sabotaging the shit out of it. That's what I tend to do day to day. On my journey to this place, it's been a long old road. And to be honest, it is one of those journeys where I've really turned pain into purpose. I grew up in a traditional Southeast London family, very hyper-masculine environment that I grew up in. The reward system was the social club or going down for beers with your mates. Act up, grow up, big boys don't cry, get up, dust it down, show emotional control. All the old metaphors and sayings that we got used to say, I was conditioned under that conditioning. Unfortunately, I was, as a child, a very anxious individual, again, through conditioning, through different attachment wounds, fear of abandonment. I was severely bullied from the age of 9 years old till I left school. The reason for being bullied was because I tried to fit in. That's what I was always doing. My attempt was to fit in, to be part of the it crowd. I was probably one of the smallest, one of the fattest, one of the most unfittest. I definitely wasn't popular with the girls. So me trying to fit into a crowd that I knew that I wasn't part of really damaged my own perception of self. This trauma had consequences. I suppressed, depressed and repressed this these years because I was the oldest of two other brothers. And I wanted to keep the image, especially in this traditional home, of being the alpha of the three brothers, that I could protect these lads, because I was told, you're the big brother, make sure you're able to look after, provide for them. So it got to, with all that suppression, depression, it was dragged into relationships. It was like a pattern that I had created. And my first meaningful relationship was at the age of 21, 22, which was my first long-term relationship, which was probably a relationship born out of a trauma bond. It resulted in me being very submissive in the relationship, not being able to use my authentic voice, had huge attachment wounds, huge fear of abandonment. So I would bow and give in to anyone's needs just to be kept safe or feel safe internally, meaning that I was able to be abused in that relationship as well. I was sufferer of domestic violence, physically and mentally. After that relationship did end, I didn't know how to deal with that trauma. Like, I really did not know how to deal with it. Because of the same pattern that I played out in school, I suppressed that. And during the suppression, I needed to numb out. And the only way to deal with numbing out in the environment I was in was cocaine use. It was the drug of choice. And at the beginning of my drug use or my introduction to cocaine, it was the best feeling ever. I could have that sense of escape where I was not me for a period of time. I was this alpha, confident party boy. It was like a false bravado that my wounded ego needed to sort of be, if that makes sense. And my cocaine use went from a typical, I would say, like normal socially, raves, parties, Friday, Saturdays, to daily. I couldn't cope without it on a day-to-day basis. And at the time, that wasn't actually, for me, it was actually an act of self-love. I just didn't know how to deal with all this shit that was underneath here. I wasn't comfortable with my body. So it was a form of escape. Unfortunately, with addiction, it led me down one path where I started to sabotage my whole life, like career, family caught me taking cocaine, using cocaine daily. I stole. And then ultimately I led myself to a place of, I didn't want to be here anymore. I just couldn't make sense of the world. I couldn't make sense of what it was to be. And I actually thought I was doing everyone a disservice by being here. So I chose an option, which was try to take my own life on two separate occasions. And on the second occasion, I was critically ill and I got offered an opportunity, more false golden handcuffs, into being put into care. I was sectioned under the Mental Health Act because I was a danger to myself and a danger to others. For me, that point right there on the first night that I laid in that ward was the moment that I decided to take charge of my life and go on a road to recovery and then fight back. And my whole business is built on that premise, turning that pain into complete and unwavering passion and purpose. So that's how I try to deliver for my clients.
Wow, that's a really touching and moving journey that you've been on. I appreciate your vulnerability and sharing that with myself and obviously the listeners as well. Like, I do really appreciate that because that's obviously a very personal journey to you. I'm interested to hear about that first night, that first night where you said it was almost like a catalyst moment for you. Do you remember much from that first night, and what actually was the catalyst? What was the changing moment?
There was two points in that day. There was one point at the beginning of the day. Basically, these care facilities, they have lockers in the hallway where your caregivers can put in treats. And I went to the locker to get my treats for the day, which my mum had kindly put me in. My favourite chocolate bar at the time was a Snickers and a 10-pack of Sovereign cigarettes. So I got this 10-pack and my Snickers, and I went, I got my pills. I had to take three separate pills, which is the only thing that's like a film, right? It's not white padded walls, but I did have to go to the window where I had my little cup. And I went outside in like this communal garden, and I had my sovereign and my Snickers, and there was this man in the corner and in this like communal garden, he was primming the bushes or something. And he said, come over here, mate, like come and speak to me. And I was like, okay, like, I'll come speak to you. And anyway, he was like, psst, 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 come here. And in the corner of these bushes is what he wanted to show me. He had banana skins that he'd been baking in the sun, drying out in the sun. He was like, if you smoke these can get you off your fucking tits. And I was like, right, this guy is fucking crazy. Right. I was like, I'm not this. This is not me. That was, and okay, it was very judgmental at the time. But that was a point where I was like, okay, you're actually mentally sane here. You're actually sane. You are doing the harm to yourself. It was just like this is you versus you at the moment. Not that you're this way, this far gone, that you can't come back. And I was lying in my bed on this blue padded plastic fucking mattress in the middle of the night. You weren't allowed blinds. There was no blinds. It was like just the fucking street lights coming through this facility. And I could not sleep. And I was lying there and I was like, you have a choice now. You live and you live well or you die. There's no other thing. I stay in here, I'm dying. Or I come out and I have to grow. It was, for me, it was the moment where it was like, there was no in between. It was like, live, die. This is your choice. What do you want to do? And I don't know. It was a spiritual awakening. I spent a whole night questioning that. Do I want to die? Do I want to live? And I come out the other side the next day and it's like, I want to live. So that was when I started making radical changes.
That's awesome, man. And I think it's those moments where you are at what is seemingly a crossroad. You have a decision to make.
Mm.
Do I turn left or do I turn right? What helped you make that decision? Because there might be some people that are also listening in some shape or form are at a crossroad, whether it be to the severity that we're talking about here or not so much. But I think, how did you assist yourself in making that decision?
I suppose a lot was down to my caregivers, my mum, my dad, who are they're beautiful parents. I'm very blessed. And the second part was, when I was 5 years old, I promised myself I would do something special one day. And I don't know, you could call it like a bit of a spiritual awakening, or there's partly that, but I'm here doing it for that five-year-old kid, the five-year-old kid who had a dream, the five-year-old kid that wanted to be, wanted to do, wanted to achieve something, be part of this world. It was just conditioning, social conditioning, and growing up in a very hyper-masculine environment that taught me to fit in rather than belong. I had to get back to that place. I had to get back to the five-year-old kid. I had to do it for him, as well as my mum and dad. Like, let's face it, my mum and dad brought me into this world and did their fucking very best with the tools that they had. And I owed it to them as well to give back.
Nice. I think that's also really powerful in itself, what you're saying there, is that sometimes if we're in a space where we don't want to do it for ourselves, we can motivate ourselves into positive change by doing it for something outside of ourselves. And that can be your motivating factors, like your caregivers, or it can also be that detachment from self. If you do that detachment, you're like, I'm doing it for that younger version of me, that five-year-old boy who dreamt of being an astronaut, who was big, grandiose plans of how he was going to take over the world, and he made a promise to himself that he'd do whatever he could do to fulfill that. I think when you're at that point where you're no longer that five-year-old boy, you can talk to your inner child and you can separate from self and use that as a motivating factor as well, is talk to your younger self. And if you find that difficult, if you've got a younger sibling, you can almost talk to them and position them as your younger self. Like there's ways that you can leverage tools to help you in that moment to be motivated outside of yourself if you're struggling to do it for yourself in that moment as well.
I couldn't agree more with you. The big part of the work that I do with clients, I use quite a holistic approach. I use a lot of somatic techniques. I think we've spoken about this, but I'm big on meditation, breath work. Me and my partner host breath work events. And I'm very about the mind and body connection because it's what works for me. Like there will be medicine that works for yourself and there'll be medicine that worked for me. And we both serve our own purposes in this world. My medicine was really to work with that principle of reparenting. And that's what I was doing. The real deep healing work that I had to go through was reparenting my inner child, being the father and the mother figure that I actually needed. Like my mum and dad, they had three kids, both full-time jobs, wasn't able to give me the love, care and attention and validation that I really needed at that age and through my teenage years. So now the biggest part and of my journey was actually reparenting that inner child, giving that inner child a voice and showing him you're going to be safe. I remember I recently done, I'd done an event, mindset maintenance. I done a talk in front of 200 people. I've never done anything like this. And I'm talking in front of 200 people. And my good friend, he walked in front of me and he was like, you're on next. You're going to go and speak on stage. I was like, okay, right, come on. We're getting in the zone. All this fear and doubt, there were all these insecurities being brought to the surface. And as I was walking to stage, I was talking to my inner child. I was saying, I am safe. We're going to be safe. Because all that fear and self-doubt comes from childhood wounds. That's where your conditioning, the main part of your conditioning, and the main part of you not being able to use your authenticity comes from. My friend was like, who the fuck were you talking to when you were getting on stage? So I was taking my inner child on a journey. We were going up there together. I was showing him somatically, you're going to be safe. Yeah, it's really that for me is probably the biggest motivation with what I do and how I show up every day.
Nice. And for those who are unaware as to what somatics are, how would you describe it?
Okay, so when I first went into the self-development, personal development space on my own journey, I found that really my options were limited. At the time, at 27, this is 10 years ago, the main thing that I could choose to try and develop was just talk therapy. That was literally, at the time, was the only option. And I used to work with people, mainly women, that had probably 10 cats. And I was sitting on her sofa and she was looking down at the end of her glasses. And I'm talking to her about drug addiction and abuse and what it's like to be a man. I was like, you've got a fucking clue. And it wasn't until I went into the journey into the coaching arena, working with coaches, and then they started using somatic techniques, which is all about the body and how to heal from the somatic energy, which is this part is like, it's the body, it's the head down, you know, and that's really about all nervous system regulation. That's what it comes down to. Somatic techniques, breath work, meditation, there's like things like tapping and trauma work in yoga and all of those bits and pieces. But that worked for me. That was a huge part of me being able to sit in my emotional body. Because most men sabotage their lives because it's not safe just to sit in your emotional body. Like, I don't feel safe just sitting here for 5 minutes alone in the dark. And there was that, I think I said it before, but there was a German proverb that says, you can always tell the quality of a man's life by his ability to sit alone in the dark with his own thoughts. And that's because they're not safe to sit in their emotional body. And that's why somatics for me is so fucking powerful. It helps you regulate and give you the ability to be able to sit in the discomfort of silence, which is hard for most men.
I think a lot of guys are going to listen to that proverb and resonate. And I would imagine that will be quite a breakthrough moment for a lot of people is, like you say, the ability or the lack of ability for you to be able to sit in silence and be at one with your own noise. most people spend their entire life trying to avoid the noise, trying to actually avoid what is going on upstairs. And we do that through so many different means. Like, I know personally, I've done it through drug use, through alcohol, through exercise, through food. There's so many different ways that we can escape ourselves. And ultimately, the quicker we realize that's exactly what we're doing, is we're just escaping ourselves. We're just, there are many different tools that we can use to do that. But it's, I think, recognizing the intention behind what we're doing is that, am I doing this out of pleasure? Am I doing this out of pain? And for me, even like things like exercise, to somebody else, it was like, oh, he's training, he loves training, he's getting himself fit and healthy. So I was actually doing it to escape myself. I wanted to feel numb. Yeah. I wanted to not be inside my head. So I'd spend 2 hours in a gym twice a day or something like that, just to escape the noise. And the sooner you realize that, and the sooner you become aware of what your tool is or your vice, you can then start to make the appropriate steps to getting comfortable in the silence.
I could not agree with that more. I know men that their vices are overworking. They are actually hide behind the success of work, working long hours, which will destroy all the relationships around them and destroy actually what they want to do, like build a family, have the dream relationship, have the kids, have the dog, all of that. They will hide behind it, as you said, all of those different vices, but also work. Anything that sabotages, and this is what I always say, anything that sabotages your dream or stops you living your dream, whatever the thing is, that's a form of escapism, not being able to sit in the emotional body.
Guilty of the work side of things. Absolutely. That was a really big revelation for myself over the past few years. It's very easy to convince yourself that you're doing it for a different intention. But exactly like you say, if you start to bring an awareness to what it is that you're doing, you start to ask yourself better questions, you often find that there are better answers. And I can wholeheartedly say that I was one of those people who hid behind the hustle and bustle of work. I spent 4 years working 7 days a week and burning myself out and working myself into the ground. And it's so easy to convince yourself that you're doing it for a bigger cause. You're doing it for your long-term self or your future self. But there's a fine line between what is the motivating factor here. I think that's it. That's the question I always ask, is what's the source? Is the source pain? Is the source pleasure? Because if it is pain, at some point that source isn't going to be enough. That source is gonna run out for one reason or another. I think it often comes crashing down, because if it the source is pain, exactly like you said, it usually leads to self-sabotaging behaviors.
I speak about this with a client, with all my clients, but your emotional container, if you looked at the body as a channel and you're numbing out all the time, all you're doing is suppressing, depressing and repressing the emotional container. At one point, this body can only hold so fucking much. And when it is full, you won't even see how it is sabotaging. It can be quite violent, and you won't even be aware of the violence that you're causing or the sabotage that you're causing. You might be pushing relationships away. You might be overly aggressive. You might just numb out and veg out. But they are always where they're calls for you, because your emotional container is full. You're not comfortable to heal what's underneath. And you need to do the work. That's a sign for me always. That's your sign. That's your inner work right there. You need to be doing the fucking work.
Which leads me onto a question that I've actually been keen to ask you, because I see you talking about the inner work a lot on your socials. What is the inner work? For somebody who has never come across this type of work that we're talking about today, what is the inner work?
this could be... The more I've gone into this, it's just blown my mind, the deeper I get into the work. And I've spoken quite openly with you behind the scenes, but I'm going deep into my journey at the moment. I'm either going to test plant medicine with a shaman in bloody Costa Rica. Inner work, though, for like how I would describe it, because it doesn't sound that glamorous and it doesn't sound that like, courageous for a man to be like, oh yeah, that sounds fucking fun, because it doesn't sound like it, does it?
Yeah.
But really, it's to ultimately cultivate a relationship with yourself, a deep relationship with yourself, that ultimately you're acting out of your highest self. So you're working with your highest self at all times. Now, there's two elements to inner work: the mental side, your mindset, which is your brain from the age of two is the is most malleable, where it's sucking up all this information from caregivers, teachers, friends, and it's creating limiting belief after core belief after trauma. And this concept of identity that we create is fucking limiting. It keeps you playing life small. Like, people don't realize how small that they are playing life and how in the comfort zone that they are. And the second part of it is to do with the somatics, is to do with the body. Like, the inner work is getting you to be feeling emotionally, completely different piece of work, but emotionally, you also feel good and you feel like you can. When you're met with challenge, when you're met with obstacles, when you're met with pain, you're able to regulate during that, rather than do what most men do, is we go in peaks and troughs. We get one high peak of this ultimate high, and then we have this huge fucking low, which is full of pain, despair, and where we're sabotaging. So by doing the inner work, it releases you from outside your fucking comfort zone. You stop playing life small. Two, you're able to regulate your nervous system. And three, ultimately, you're able to do what you wanted to do when you was a bloody kid. Now, obviously, when you was a kid, sometimes you wanted to be an astronaut, as per your example. Might not be able to do that, but we will be able to create a life that's aligned with like our creativity and ultimately what brings us purpose.
A word that springs to mind there is our authentic self.
Mm.
I think something that I often present my clients with is, if there were no limitations to what was possible, but you're still living within reality, what would you want to achieve? What would you want to do with yourself? How would you want to feel?
Mm.
I think by positioning it in that way, we get rid of the psychological ceilings that we have. Because a lot of our psychological ceilings, let's say we're goal setting, we set goals off the basis of what we've achieved in the past, or what I've been able to create, or how I've felt, which is in and of itself very limiting, because there is already a ceiling that is above us that's self-imposed. So I often say to them, if we take away, there were no rules, it was limitless, you could do whatever you wanted, dive into your curiosity, what would it be? And I think we often go into that childlike nature of creativity and imagination that unfortunately we all lose, and it gets beaten out of us from quite a young age because we have the sober reality of life, which is sad, but that's a conversation for another time. But we try to push ourselves back into that creative space and we let our imagination run wild. And I think that's when our authentic self starts to come out. It's like, you know what? Maybe I don't actually like pushing paper in my office job. I actually really want to do something for the environment. I really want to help other people. That's something that so many guys tell me. I want to make a positive impact for other people. I want to help guys who are in a position that I'm in. And I think then we can reverse engineer it. It's okay. So what type of man do you have to be in order to make that happen?
Mm-hmm. And
that's when you can then start looking at it from, that's who I want to be. That's the type of man I want to be. That's how I want to be showing up. You then look at where you are right now, you've got a bit of a journey of bridging the gap between the two. So I think it's just saying the words authentic self, or saying in like higher self, people are like, I don't know, because I've only ever known me now in my current state. It's quite hard for people to fathom, because like you say, you base a lot of your future plans and ideas off of what you've previously achieved. If you've never been your higher self, a lot of people find it quite difficult to envision that, and like vision what they look like, and to articulate how that looks as well. But if we allow people to think in all of their grandiosity, it can often get rid of the social constructs and those psychological ceilings.
Oh, big time. Well, in self-development, I think there's two main areas that you can work with, like the two biggest areas in like in terms of inner work. One, attachment wounding, and two, healthy egoic development. Now, most of us men, we all have an ego. Ego gets a bit of a bad rep, but we all have an ego. But most of us men, most of us women as well, we are living with a wounded ego. It's that voice, that inner critic. That's your egoic mind. And when I ever first start working with clients, I get them to start witnessing the egoic mind. So I call it like a separation. We're going on divorce for the next 12 weeks. You're going on a separation. Just to picture this, you're living with your carer for a psychotic younger brother. He's a murderer, rapist. He pillages, he's a thief, and he's in a straitjacket. Now, he's the one giving you advice. So we're going to put him on leave for like 12 weeks and we're going to witness exactly what he's saying. And to how to get to or to deepen their awareness with his concept of identity is any statement that starts with I am this, I am that. So we get them to take a 12-week sabbatical, because what I want them to get rid of or start breaking down is their current concept of their identity, because their current concept of identity is being given by a psychotic younger sibling who has got every intention about keeping you playing life small because he's in a fucking straitjacket. So we need to completely tear down the walls of his comfort zone currently and rebuild the foundations where we get the ego into a nice healthy state where he works for you, which when he works for you, he will tell you there's a tiger standing outside. You will die if you go outside. And we can listen to that voice. But instead, unless we work with him and start creating this healthy development of him, he's going to continue to keep you playing life small.
That's a really interesting way of putting it. And I think a really powerful thought exercise to run through there. I like that. That's really cool, man.
Yeah, I get them to name them. Name your ego. Just for mine's called Egotistical Eric, and it really helps me, because if I ever say, I don't know if I can do this, I was like, right, there's my ego putting a limit straight on me. Eric's out and about, and it just makes you laugh and bring you back into the present moment and realize, to be honest, you're playing life small. Like I still work with my ego day to day, my inner critic.
Is that a journey that you think ever comes to an end?
If you think about it, the Buddhas say there's 7 years to enlightenment. And why they say 7 years to enlightenment? Because you're actually, your cells in your body, actually every 7 years, they're like your brand new person. That's the same with states, beliefs, and behaviors from before. It takes 7 years to dismantle them and completely eradicate them. So by starting to do the work now, you're on a 7-year journey to be the best version of you. Is there an end destination? I don't think there will ever be an end destination. Can I get better day to day? Oh, ultimately, I can get rid of a new pattern and a new state day to day. Because I think once you understand the framework of inner work and you know how to be held and you know how to be looked after, I think you'll agree with me. I still work with a mentor now. I still have a coach. I still have a mentor. I still work with someone day in and day out. When you see the power of the work, whether that's in the fitness, the coaching industry, or whoever's holding you accountable, you start getting rid of these states and beliefs, you know how powerful it is. The work, you get a better ROI, return of investment. You get look better. You feel better. Everything works out better. So you have that relationship with yourself where you can invest in self knowing, actually, this is okay. I'm going to get rid of some more bullshit out of my head because me personally, I've got 36 years of conditioning to get rid of. Like, that's not going to happen over a 6-year period. There's going to be always going to be something, a pattern that I need to break.
And someone who's maybe listening to this might feel overwhelmed by the fact that they've got almost like a minimum of a 7-year journey to get to where they feel at this point in time is an end destination. We know that the goalposts are ever moving. How can somebody come to peace with knowing that this isn't
ever going to be an end destination. There is never going to be a point where you're like, awesome, completed it.
Stop chasing happiness. Happiness, like motivation, two traits that I say to my clients, stop fucking searching for that. They are moving targets. If you're chasing, loads of people when they start working with myself, their main goal, I just want to feel happy. Just want to be happy, happy every day. Right. Happiness is a moving target. It's based on climbing one mountain. Once you climb to the top of the mountain, guess what? Another fucking mountain appears, right? Stop chasing it. Enjoy, find joy, which is a higher vibration than happiness, coupled with gratitude, and enjoy and embrace every part of the journey. That, if you're embracing and experiencing joy, which joy is one of the emotions men are taught from young to suppress, depress, and repress. That's why they struggle with it so much to experience it. This is why doing the work now, once you start experiencing joy, life changes, man. You're like, you're different. You show up differently. You're able to regulate and embrace the challenge.
The way I've always perceived happiness and joy, the difference between the two, is that happiness is something that we almost obtain. It's something that comes from outside of ourselves. Mm. Similar to what you said there with motivation. It's extrinsically sourced. It's, I have got a new car, I feel happy for a short bit of time, and then obviously we know it wears off. I've just climbed to the top of that mountain, I feel elated because I'm at the top, I've taken the view, and then very quickly I become bored again and I need to find another mountain to climb. Whereas I think joy is a state of being.
Yes,
it's intrinsically sourced, and you can do anything joyfully. So even let's think of a quite horrible situation like grieving and mourning. You can mourn joyfully, which is a strange concept, but that means that your internal state and your internal level of being is in almost like a constant of joy. And maybe that's because you're celebrating the life of the person, but in that moment you wouldn't say you're happy, because obviously there's sadness that ensues. There's, like you say, it's, they're all moving targets, and like emotion is obviously energy in motion. So all of these like energies are just moving through you at any given time. Somebody could say something, you see a photo of that loved one, and immediately that's been the external trigger that makes you no longer feel happy and sad. But that doesn't mean in that moment you can't be joyful. And I think that's the big difference between the two, is that I guilty of being the person who has incessantly chased happiness and the achievement of goals, and trying to climb the mountain, trying to buy the house, trying to get into shape, trying to hit that PB, trying to earn this amount of money, trying to buy that car, whatever it is, you name it, I've done it. But there was never that feeling of joy that was experienced, which always put me in this position of lack. It was this constant
scarcity. Yeah, exactly.
That I was in this constant feeling of scarcity. Nothing was ever enough. And for me, a big part of my own personal journey, just on what you said there, is trying to get myself into that state of joy, which I think is ironic because it's actually surrendering rather than trying to do something. And it's like surrendering enough to allow myself to be in a state of joy, no matter what's going on in my external world.
My previous mentor, I worked with a guy called Alan Dolan, who's big in the breath. He's like the grandfather of the breathwork world, the conscious connected breath. That's what, there's different types of breathwork. He was the guy who trained Russell Brand. And he was my mentor for 9 months. And he was KD's a qualified breathwork facilitator in that style of breath. And when I was under his mentorship over the course of the time, there was one line that always landed. He went, lose the illusion of control. That's what he said, lose the illusion. The only thing that is in our control is how we show up. That's it.
Amen.
Can't control the outcome, boys and women. Can't control it.
There's a very good book. I don't know if you've read it. It's by a guy called Michael Singer, and it's The Surrender Experiment. And
I love Michael Singer.
Yeah, it's a really good book. And that for me was quite illuminating to that point, is that you have zero control over anything that happens in your life other than yourself and how you show up and whatever obviously that means, your being or your doing. And it's a really awesome concept that once you just let go and you just fall back into life and you stop trying to expect things to happen, you stop treating life as if it owes you something, the experience and the journey becomes significantly more joyful. And I know that a lot of people listening to this will be like, ah, it sounds wishy-washy, it sounds really woo-woo and spiritual. But the reality is, what other choice do you have?
Keep chasing for more. There will never be enough.
No, I think most people know that.
Yeah, there will never be enough. You'll never have enough. So do you let go and then allow yourself to experience joy in this moment, in this day, watching this clip, wherever you are with your cup of coffee, cup of tea? Do you allow yourself to experience it right now? Or do you chase for more? Are you wanting something more from this conversation? Are you wanting something more from tomorrow, next day? Well, then you're basically giving your own power away to the external world,
which we've already identified you have no control over. And
amen.
It's, yeah, so illuminating. I remember listening to a podcast episode that Mo Gordat was on once, which he created like that equation, the happiness equation, I think he called it.
Yes.
Where he said that ultimately the reason why people feel unhappy and unfulfilled is because their expectations are set and the reality of life doesn't meet their expectations. And that is fundamentally the reason as to why people feel unfulfilled. I think a simple in theory, obviously difficult in practice, solution to that is relinquish expectations. Get rid of the notion, like you say, of control. Get rid of the notion that life owes you anything. And as cheesy as it sounds, try and enjoy the ride. Try and enjoy actually every single moment that you are fortunate enough to be present within, which is very fortunate to be here. Realize that in all of its glory. And I actually think the paradox to that is that you will be significantly more joyful. You will funny enough, actually attract more happiness into your life anyway, which is the funny paradox. And the whole experience of this hustle and bustle of life actually becomes a little bit more bearable.
I could not agree with you more. There was this, I worked with a guy called Preston Smiles, and I was in one of his like group workshops. And he talks about, he's very much in the law of manifestation. But you have four stages in the law of manifestation. Conception, you've created the idea, the expectation, whatever the thing was. I want to create this dream life in this dream country, whatever it was. Perception, so your perception of how it looks externally. Deception, now you can't get hot without cold. So it's going to show you, if you want £1 million, it's going to show you the opposite of £1 million, because you have to know what the other end fucking looks like. So you've got the conception, perception, deception, reception. So reception, how you tend to receive now, are you going to focus on lack because it has to show you the opposite? Or are you going to focus on the abundance? Like I believe that I will achieve that. And that allows you, by focusing on that, I just know it's happening. Just letting go, I know, I trust my intuition that that's the right path for me. And when you surrender, then you attract more. Notice, but you see it in sales all the time. Speak to a lot of directors. When their team or when they are relaxed, they attract more sales. It's like it just comes naturally. Yeah, fucking hell, this is easy. Like I've booked another interview. I've just landed a new deal. Whatever it is, but when you're in that place of lack, it's scarce, desperation, you don't even see how that affects your behavior, the way you're showing up, the way you're communicating. It's huge. Lack versus abundance. Where is your fucking focus?
That's it. Yeah. And it's really hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle.
Oh, it was so hard. Yeah.
Absolutely. Again, talking to that point of therefore the importance of having somebody who is able to objectively look at what's going on and healthily point things out to you. And I think that's where a coach or a mentor really serves its purpose of being able to look into your life and, like I say, point things out, bring an awareness to you, hold the mirror up for you so you can have a look at what's actually going on. I think that's really important. What would you say one of the biggest lessons or insights that you have learned on your own personal journey has been?
The biggest. Trusting that the pain that you feel right now has got a purpose. It is a lesson that you need to learn. If I look back at every time I've had a painful situation, the abuse, the addiction, the bullying, the trauma, the not being able to hold down a relationship because I had an anxious attachment wound, all of those pieces. And I'm learning huge lessons at the moment within business. And I'm showing up differently during this period of challenge. But all of this pain is serving me in its weird and wonderful, amazing, stupid way it's decided to show up in my life. But I wouldn't change it.
Amazing.
That's the biggest one.
I love it. I love it. I think that is so important, is recognizing, one, that this too shall pass, but two, that what is the meaning behind this feeling? Why is this here? What's it trying to tell me? What lesson do I need to learn? Because if we keep walking into the same wall and expecting it to not be there, then we have to take responsibility for that.
Yeah. I mean, I had I suppose before I met my beloved, who I'm madly besotted with, and we're a good few years in now. But before that, I had three long-term relationships, or like a year, 2 years, that type of thing. They all ended in the same way, but I refuse to sit in the discomfort of the pain and learn the lessons. And guess what? The pattern of my subconscious brain and somatic body would play out again and again until I learned that it was my responsibility. That the people that I thought were hurting me for cheating on me or showing me abuse or anything like that, actually, it was the wrong way around. This is all my responsibility. I didn't heal my wounds. I didn't heal my anxious attachment wound. One, I didn't know how to hold myself to a high self-esteem and say it authentically using my authentic voice, what it is I actually fucking needed or what I wanted. I couldn't put the boundary in place. It was all my responsibility. I created that.
So to someone who is listening, what could be the first couple of steps that they could take to start to do their own inner work?
There was two practices that if I was brand new to doing any work whatsoever, two practices I would incorporate as, no, three. There's three. Okay, these are the three main habits I would start incorporating into my day. One, meditation. I'm not talking about meditation from a spiritual practice. The reason meditation is so amazing is it starts to regulate your nervous system. Your nervous system, when regulated into a place of connection, even if your mind's busy, just continue to go with it, it actually creates new neuron pathways in your brain. So if you want to adopt and create new life-changing habits, beliefs, behaviors, meditation is fundamental to creating that, because it regulates you into a place where if you're dealing with stress or you have stressful situations, because you are going to have stress, you are going to have pain, you are going to have challenge, but you're able to regulate quicker throughout those situations. They don't become, as the old saying goes, you make a mountain out of a molehill. So that's the first practice I would start today, even if it's just for 5 minutes. There's no one of the key components of meditation is to practice non-judgmental awareness. So you're not doing it to be a bloody Buddha and start going, I can sit there for half an hour. Just start. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, five. Second practice, journal. This will just get you to start being introspective. And a lot of people, I tell them to just brain dump. See what you're thinking. Like, start viewing it. Like, what is it you're actually saying to yourself? View it, look at it. Like, and then try to look at it from, again, non-judgmental awareness and start looking at it logically. You asked a brilliant question earlier in this conversation. And I ask very similar question when I get people to start asking themselves some introspective questions, like journaling prompts. If you didn't give a shit and no one else's judgments mattered, what would you do? That question is powerful. The next question I get them to always ask when they start, who am I? Really simple. It's a question I ask myself on a daily basis. Who the fuck am I? Who am I showing up as today? How do I want to show up? And the third practice, which I think is lacking in most men, self-celebration. If you want to start winning at life, truly winning, make self-celebration a habit. We only celebrate as men the big moment. We talked about this, like happiness, like that achievement. To experience more joy, we must be able to celebrate the journey, the small micro shifts that create the breakthroughs, that create the big moments. So celebrate the moments, celebrate the small achievements. If you wasn't able to get up at 5 a.m., but the next day you're able to get up at 5 a.m. and do a 10-minute meditation practice, celebrate that. Reward yourself for that small micro shift. Make self-celebration a practice. Those are my three habits that I would use, because what this does cultivate is discipline. And now we all have a very varying relationship with discipline dependent on our conditioning when young. We could see it as a negative discipline. But discipline is one of the highest acts of self-love. Because when you're disciplined, disciplined with your practices, disciplined with your goals, disciplined with what you want to achieve, you're doing that for your higher self. So that, all them practices, cultivate one of the highest forms of self-love.
Amazing. And so many of my clients will be listening to this and like, I now see why he gets me to do all of these things. But I think that it's so important as well to actually understand the reason behind why you're asking somebody to do these things or you're recommending those things. Mm. And you've eloquently put it there, all the reasons as to why somebody should start to actually action those. Mm. Because it's all well and good on social media, us seeing somebody doing cold plunges, seeing somebody meditate, somebody bashing you over the head that you've got a journal. But if you don't understand the reason as to why that behavior is going to serve you, you may do it for 2 weeks or so, and then the idea and the novelty wears off. But I think once you really gain an understanding of the benefit and the power behind those three behaviors and habits, I think that in and of itself should be enticing enough for you to at least give a good go at trying to work on those.
Yeah, there's a lady, one of my people that I was one of my idols, one of my heroes, and she's a lady called Brianna West, brilliant writer. We buy all of her books. But she writes this amazing book for all your viewers and listeners. The Mountain Is You is one of the best books on self-sabotage. But she puts it quite beautifully, why you do these habits, why you make these small shifts. Because those habits are compounded over a period of time. It's like your investments. They do not pay out right at the beginning. It is compounded interest. So the longer you incorporate these habits, even when you don't want to show up for yourself, they are compounded over the period of time and they pay out at some point when you don't expect it.
I'm definitely going to be purchasing that book myself and recommending that to a lot of people as well. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you for being here, man. Finally, important question. what are you working on right now and where can people find you?
We are working on a couple of big things at the moment. I'm just launching a group program for the Embodied Man, which is a full connective incorporation of mind, spirit, emotion, and soul for the Embodied Man. Well, that's going to be a group program and training, which I'm super excited to launch because that has all my best modalities, all my best toolkit, all my best breath work and meditations. And I'm bringing it into something that's going to be what I call lower ticket. So more people can access the work that I had to pay tens of bloody thousands for. So I am giving it away for so cheap. And the second bit that we're working on, me and my beloved are working on our ultimate escape to freedom. So our external freedom, which will look like, hopefully this time next year, being able to host retreats in Europe, which will use a lot of our somatic practices, maybe some medicine that will be incorporated into the journey as well, which we hope to create a more in-person coaching and holistic service. And you can find me, sorry, Daniel J. Constable, at Daniel J. Constable on Instagram.
Amazing. And I'll put all of the relevant information and whatnot into the show notes of today, but I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on those retreats that you're doing, and I might cop myself a ticket and come along as well.
You definitely should. I'd love you and your missus there. It would be amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm fully down for that. That'd be awesome. But mate, I appreciate all your time and patience. So I know we've had a couple of difficulties in trying to like logistically make this happen. So thank you for devoting your time to being here. Thank you for pouring your heart out on this episode today. And I appreciate you showing up for me, for yourself, and also for the audience.
Thank you so much, mate. I really do appreciate the invite.
Awesome, man. Speak soon.
Cheers, Jack.
Guys, I appreciate you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did and you found it valuable. To make sure you don't miss an episode like this in the future, hit that subscribe button. But until then, take ownership, take action, and keep hustling.